Oakland-born Damian Lillard.
Now, what a second season for Damian Lillard.
Last year's Rookie of the Year, an All-Star this year. It's Lillard. He got the shot off. Lillard got it! And the Blazers win the series for the first time in 14 years!
This is Damian Lillard from the Portland Trail Blazers, and you're listening to Drive Time Sports with George Buscarini on KOAL 750 AM.
A very busy day, to say the least, in the NBA. The trade deadline, it's come, it's gone. We had everything from smaller trades to blockbusters. The Jazz were silent today, but they made their move yesterday. The big story, Ben Simmons is finally gone, no longer wearing a Philadelphia 76er uniform. I know our next guest is excited to put the Ben Simmons trade talk to sleep. Joining us as he does each Thursday, we have Mark Schindler joining us to talk NBA basketball. Mark, great to get you back on today. Thank you.
Thanks for having me, Jordan. I'm psyched to be back, man. And you already said it before I could. I'm just very glad that we have this put to bed and we don't have to talk about it anymore. I'm just excited to talk about the on-court fit, what it's going to look like, but not having to, you know, constantly do the poking and prodding. Is Ben going to come back? Is Ben is mad about this? The Sixers are mad about that. Doc said this. Doc did that. I'm very glad that we're past that stage because it's I've been over it for quite some time.
Let's talk about the landscape of it. First off, this is what Brooklyn is receiving. Ben Simmons, Seth Curry, Andre Drummond, two first-round picks. Here's what Philadelphia gets, James Harden, Paul Millsap. When you look at this on the surface, it seems like an awful lot for Philadelphia to give up. I was surprised that Seth Curry was involved in this deal, so I'm curious as to your initial reaction to this mega trade.
Yeah, I think ultimately it's kind of what the Sixers had to do. I mean, I don't want to say they backed themselves into a corner, but they were at the point where you could quote unquote go and get him in the offseason or wait for him to be a free agent, but I don't really think that the Nets' stance is going to change much from there. I mean, even if Harden doesn't want to be there, I think that you can try and get a very similar package. I mean, whatever was going to happen was going to be centered around Ben Simmons. I do agree letting Seth Curry go definitely hurts. I'm interested to see how that looks. I thought that was huge for the Nets to get him back. And they gave up some draft compensation too. But and like you mentioned with Drummond, I think that's going to be another interesting thing as well. Paul Millsap obviously went over, but he just hasn't been as good as Andre Drummond this year. Part of it's been consistency and not having the real run to maybe get right. But, Andre Drummond's going to be a good addition for the Nets, I think, if they use him properly. So definitely a lot to give up, but I think there's a lot to like in this for both teams in terms of what this could have been.
I give Brooklyn a little bit of an edge when I take a look at the haul that they got back. I'm not even going to talk about the draft picks because, to be quite frank, I do not care about the two first-round picks going in this deal. That, to me, it means absolutely nothing because at this particular time, we have two teams that feel that they can win an NBA championship. Okay, with that being said, knowing what we know about James Harden over the last five seasons, and maybe we could even go back deeper to that. We could go back to the disappearing act that he had in the NBA Finals. It was a different lifetime ago. That was all the way back in 2012. I don't really want to hash that out. But when you look at what we know about James Harden, is this a risk for Daryl Morey and the Philadelphia 76ers?
I mean, I think there's a risk in any move you do, especially one that's big. Let's just break it down, okay? If you could have looked at the things that were mentioned with the Kings, so it was going to be Tyrese Haliburton or De'Aaron Fox or Harrison Barnes and Buddy Hield, like whatever combination people wanted to throw at you that, you know, we were hearing about for the last couple months. You had Indiana with Malcolm Brogdon earlier in the year and draft compensation. And I like Malcolm Brogdon. He's a nice player. But just in terms of what this looks like, you know, even if we're – okay, maybe you kick this can down the road and Bradley Beal gets traded over the summer or something. I think maybe then you can squint and say, like, that could be better than the James Harden trade. But even then, I mean, James Harden, for all the faults that he's had this year, he's – that much better of a player than Bradley Beal or anyone else that they would have been able to get back in a trade for Ben Simmons, even on an aggregate. I definitely have less questions, more intrigue on what the fit is going to be like. I feel like there's going to be a lot of staggering by Doc Rivers between Joel and James, and it's going to be interesting to see how they lock in together during crunch time and obviously as a start together too. But, I mean, just from a talent perspective and what I think they needed to really get to what you can view as more of a championship contention window, I mean, I think it's wide open for them now, even if Harden does slightly regress in the summer or doesn't really always, I mean, completely get back from the hamstring injury that's ailed him for a while.
I think we can be, this is stating the obvious. Daryl Morey got his guy, right? And I guess one of the only things I can say about Morey, because I think they gave up a lot for James Harden. However, he did show patience, Mark. And I think that's something that in the NBA world, in the professional sports world, that gets overlooked sometimes. Daryl Morey wanted James Harden. There's no question about it. Today proves that. And he was fairly patient in the process of getting the guy that he wanted.
Yeah, no, I mean, 1,000%. I thought, you know, as much as it kind of irked me to a degree throughout the season because you just get tired of, like, the constant leaks and rumors, but I agree. I mean, credit to him. I just didn't expect the Nets to budge, but I think what really threw people off, I mean, I'd been hearing some stuff for a while that James was unhappy in Brooklyn. I think the extent to it had become a lot more apparent publicly over the last week or so. I didn't think it was going to get this bad, but it definitely has gotten to that point behind the scenes. I mean, some stuff got released too. I think Joe Varden over at The Athletic just profiled a little bit about the relationship between James Harden and Kyrie and how that's sour. But I think one thing that I want to hit on too, I know a lot of people are going to get frustrated about Harden with, you know, quote unquote quitting on his team. I just between me and you, man, I mean, not between me, we're on radio, but I mean, if I was with Kyrie Irving and having to deal with this situation, I'd be pretty sick of it too. I don't think I would be super interested in, you know, not knowing what things are going to look like from day to day because this guy is, you know, not able to play in half the games. I mean, it sounds trivial, but just in watching them, I mean, they look like different teams night in, night out, and they haven't been able to find consistency. And as a player, that would be extremely frustrating. So I get not wanting to deal with Kyrie and how everything is gone. But it's just been such an odd situation, and to finally see it come out like this has been, I'm just glad that it's kind of over with.
Yeah, I do agree with you. The Kyrie situation is odd. I think what makes this look worse for Harden, because you are correct. Look, let's just go right now. You go back, you look over the years at some of the most fierce competitors that we love, and we love the stories. There was a reason why Shaq and Kobe couldn't exist, right? Because the mindset was not the same. I'm not by any stretch of the imagination saying that James Harden is Kobe Bryant, but the mindset of winning an NBA championship obviously does not equal one another. And we're talking about running mates in the backcourt. So I get it. I think one of the issues here with James Harden is that there was the narrative of him quitting on his team in Houston as well. And so you get this in back-to-back instances where he basically forced himself out of two situations via trade, not free agency. I think that's why it looks bad.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. Like, that's definitely, you know, when you do something once, it's a coincidence. When it happens twice, it's a pattern. So I can't fault that. You know, it is what it is. But as for the Nets, though, I think you could arguably make a case that this is a better outcome for them than what it's looked like with Harden on court. I don't think Ben is a better player than James Harden, but the fit was just really not working to an extent. And adding Ben, I think they still have a lot to figure out in the half court, but everything they've done this year prior to Kyrie coming back was built on a defensive identity because that's what their roster was built around. I think getting back Curry is huge, especially with Joe Harris's return very up in the air, potentially getting a second ankle surgery, which was unexpected. So I don't know if he's even going to be back this year. I mean, they have answered some real questions for themselves. Obviously, they still need to figure some things out and see what, you know, KD is able to, what capacity he's able to come back, and I'm sure he'll be fine once he comes back. But they have to kind of bide some time until that happens. But I do think that this makes the Nets a little bit more formidable moving forward for me.
I agree. I think the Nets, I think they win this trade. I really do. And we'll talk about the two teams that I was massively impressed with in the trade deadline. The Nets are going to be one of them. I think that the best case scenario, anytime you go back and you take a look at trades where a superstar has been dealt, and yes, James Harden is a superstar. He's one of the most unique scorers we have seen. Very rarely do you get fair compensation in return, and I think the Nets get a huge haul. I also want to throw this out there for Nets fans. In the end, Kevin Durant, James Harden, Kyrie Irving, I think it was 15 games. Is that correct? That's what they played together?
Yeah, it's 15 or 16, somewhere right around there.
Oh, my God. And we're talking about a first-year head coach in Steve Nash as well to boot.
Yeah.
First-time head coach. Yeah. So, just not a great situation. You get better by subtraction. Even if you don't win the trade, you get better by subtraction in some form,
right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think so. And it's not even just subtraction. Like you mentioned, adding Simmons in, getting Curry was huge. Like, I thought that I would have rather seen the Sixers give up Matisse Thybulle than Seth Curry, frankly, especially if you're looking at just a window this year. But I mean, I get where they went with it. But adding in Drummond, like, I think, I don't know if Drummond will end up starting for them because they have something working a little bit with Marcus Aldridge when he's been kind of in and out, but. I mean, their big room has been disappointing, to say the least. I mean, I think they really expected more from Blake Griffin this year, and he just has struggled with the shot. He's looked a little bit better recently, but, again, that's the problem. They've been rotating guys in and out constantly, and I think Drummond gives them a little bit of just helps solidify them on both ends if he's used the right way.
Mark, let's move on. We'll talk about a couple of the other deals. Kristaps Porzingis on his way to Washington for a package that includes Spencer Dinwiddie. You want to talk about how the mighty have fallen. I know Porzingis and the narrative around him, it's really become bad. I don't want to overshoot that word, but bad over the last few years, probably because he cannot stay healthy. He's missed 21 games already this season. Hasn't played over the last 2 weeks because he's got a bone bruise. Apparently, according to Kendrick Nunn, bone bruises can be quite awful, as we've learned. But the Mavericks ship him out. In return, they get Spencer Dinwiddie and Davis Bertans. When you look at this trade, is it surprising that this was all they could net in return for Porzingis, and how do you grade it?
I guess it's not super surprising to me. I think I've gotten a little bit of pushback on this, but in watching the Mavs this year, I'm not really there with Kristaps. He's really struggled defensively ever since he had that knee injury 2 years ago. He's never really quite been able to come back right and have his mobility, which I think was like, I mean, there was a point in, what year was it? There was a point in 1920 towards the end of that year where he was looking like he wasn't going to be in the real conversation, but he was a guy who I think could grade out as a potential defensive player of the year candidate with how well he was playing, really buoying that defense, even though they didn't really have a great defense that year. A lot of the reason for why things were looking good was because of him. He was playing at like an all NBA level towards the end of that year as well. And then he gets injured in the Clippers series. I think offensively he's gotten back to some levels of close to where he was at. The shooting obviously hasn't been there for him. I still just don't love how he gets his shot off from inside the arc. I'm there with you. Like, I don't even think he's been their second best player this year, and I'm not meaning that to be harsh, but Jalen Brunson's been better, frankly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
they played well without him. I don't really think they've tried to move him for a couple seasons now. Obviously, before they re-upped with him, they had been in talks of trying to trade him. So I felt like this was inevitable at some point. I think it took me by surprise today just because we hadn't really heard anything about him until Jake Fisher reported on interest around the league this morning. I don't know what to make of him entirely. I think this trade in general, like the way I look at it, it's a little bit of a wash for both teams, kind of trying to recoup value over past front office mistakes. Or I should just say past mistakes because this, the way that the Dinwiddie and Bertans signings have gone are both during Tommy Shepard's era. But, I mean, Porzingis was signed before, I'm trying to remember his name right now, that is head in, well, it's Nico something. But whoever, I should remember this, but Dallas's front office was different when they re-signed Porzingis, obviously. So I think to an extent, they just don't view him as part of the future. I know that the contracts don't look great for Dinwiddie and Bertans. I think those guys could both look better in a new scenario. I think that they both, frankly, needed a new scenario. I'm not entirely sure how Spencer's going to look alongside Luka. He didn't look great alongside Brad Beal. He did look a lot better when he played by himself, so maybe you view him coming more off the bench as a sixth man. Tim Hardaway Jr. is going to be out for the foreseeable future, too, still. So there's just more there where I'm like, I think it's been panned in both directions a little bit too much, and I think it's more of just that we have to wait and see how the three guys play in their collective places. But, just to hit on Washington a little bit more, too, I understood it from their perspective as well. I mean, they've had clashing heads throughout that roster. I mean, Montrezl Harrell got traded for what felt like pennies on the dollar today.
Yep.
I think part of that is because, he's having a career year. He's been fantastic this year, but he really clashed in that locker room. The same thing with Spencer Dinwiddie. They really struggled with, the leadership style and the way that things were going, and they got shipped out because of it. I'm interested to see how that works with Porzingis, and hopefully they view him as somebody that they can maybe keep healthy and will fit with Bradley Beal moving forward. But it's very up in the air on both ends for me on that one. I just kind of have it as a ungraded for both right now.
One of the teams that I have to talk about again, I love what Brooklyn did, so I really consider Brooklyn to be one of the winners today, but the Clippers were just phenomenal in my mind over the last 72 hours. You and I have not talked about the Powell and Covington deal. Right out of the gate, you look at the luxury tax bill, you say, okay, this is going to grow. Guess what? Steve Ballmer is taking the Stan Kroenke approach. He does not care. He wants to build a winner with the Clippers. Then they make a move. They bring in Rodney Hood against someone that the Jazz faithful are going to be really, really familiar with. At the end of the day, when you take a look at what the Clippers have done, maybe it's not even for this season, because you and I had this conversation last week, but when you look at what the Clippers have done building for not only this season at 27-27, but moving into next season when we expect a healthy Paul George, when we expect a healthy Kawhi Leonard, I have to believe the Clippers were big winners.
Yeah, I mean, I really like what they've done. Like you mentioned, I think a lot of this is looking towards next year. I know there have been some rumblings that Goran Dragic could maybe be bought out and signed with the Clippers, which would be interesting for them as far as finishing out the rest of this year. But, I mean, just going out and getting Norman Powell, I thought was tremendous. I love that move. Robert Covington isn't the player that he used to be, but I think he's going to factor in as a nice bench piece. Somebody's going to play, 15, 20 minutes a game for them. Really fits the dynamic of what they try and do there. I'm really encouraged by what they've done, man. And even the way that they've looked, like they've struggled a little bit recently. They've had some rough spots. They lost the last few games in pretty bad fashion to some good teams. But, it was clear that Keon Johnson was kind of out there. He wasn't playing that much. He wasn't looking great in the G League. Brandon Boston Jr., who they drafted behind Keon Johnson, had been starting to play rotation minutes and look good. Like, I feel very good about where this team is headed right now. Serge Ibaka hadn't fit in super well, and they were trying to get him right. But I think, clearing him out paves the way for Isaiah Hartenstein to be playing more, who has been pretty solid, has struggled a little bit with finding consistency after Serge Ibaka came back. But, I totally agree with you, Jordan. I'm really excited for what this team's going to look like next season.
All right, Mark, I'll put you on the spot before I let you go. Big winner of the trade deadline.
Ooh, this is a great question. I think that my first answer would be just fans in general for yeah. Have to hear about where Ben Simmons or James Harden are going to be, and we just know now. Winner of the deadline? I mean, I really liked what the Pelicans did. I know some people scoff at it, but I thought going out and getting a talent like CJ McCollum was good. I know that the contract isn't great, but they're not fully locked into what they're doing yet. I thought getting a veteran player who can help them for their push and what they're doing right now. It is not entirely unfeasible that they pass the Lakers for the 9 seed.
Oh, I agree.
Being completely honest. And, if the Clippers keep dropping, maybe the Pelicans go up from there. Like, they've been playing so much better recently than I think they've gotten credit for. Willie Green has done a fantastic job coaching. Josh Hart and Nikhil Alexander-Walker got traded, and they stayed in New Orleans for that night to go watch their guys play. Like, I think culture and stuff can be overrated and misspoken about at times, but, you don't hear that very often of guys who, really are that bought into what their coach has going. So, I think I would put the Pels up there. I don't think that one's been talked about enough.
Big loser.
Big loser? Fans aren't going to, I mean, people listening aren't going to like this. I think it's the Jazz, man.
You think so? You think it's the Jazz? I wasn't blown away by what they did yesterday. I understand they saved a little bit of cap space against the luxury tax, and you bring in a prospect that has one more year on a rookie deal. Maybe it gives you a little bit more flexibility moving forward. I just don't know what the trade market looked like for them, Mark. I really don't.
Yeah. No, I agree. I mean, maybe it's unfair for me to say that they're the biggest loser. I'm sure I could find somebody else.
No, I like it. I like it. I like this perspective. Tell me why.
I mean, just in terms of biggest disappointment, it is the Jazz for me. Because I think we've talked about this so many times where we're at the stage of, if this team doesn't get out of the second round, then we're just kind of out on them. And I think that we're past the idea of just like a small change happening in the offseason. Like, that's one of Rudy or Donovan gets traded, probably. Like, I would imagine if this, given how things have gone between them and the media and just things in general, I would not be shocked at all if one of them gets traded in the offseason if they don't make it out of the second round. And that may sound like too forward thinking, but I think that's very possible. Like, I don't know if I fully agree with doing that. I want to see what they can do together, but I do wonder if it runs its course if they don't get it out from there. And I don't want to be too pessimistic, but I was really hoping that they could go out and really address their needs, a perimeter defense, adding some more length on the perimeter, who can play at the point of attack. And right now, that's not Nickeil Alexander-Walker. I mean, he's, like you mentioned, he's an interesting prospect. He came out of Virginia Tech more of like a connective wing type prospect, but he's really been a lot more of a shot creator and not great at it. He's had some interesting flashes, but he never really found his footing in New Orleans this season. It's been a very disappointing year for him. Like, I thought there was a chance he would start to factor in as a starter. He did start for some time, and then Herb Jones ended up starting over him, and he's been tremendous. I like the move to go get him in a vacuum, but considering where the Jazz are at, I really wanted to see something different from them.
I like it. I like the perspective, and I think you hit it right on the head, especially here in the state of Utah. I think people are tired of seeing this team being a first or second round out. I think it is a pivotal year. It makes perfect sense as to what you're saying. Mark Schindler again joining us right now. Mark, I know it's been a very hectic day for you. You've been on the phone since about 8 o'clock this morning. Before I let you go, let everyone know where they can find more of your work and your incredible insight.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at mschindlernba. That's mschindlernba. I have a Patreon link up there where, I mean, that helps me. I'm still mostly freelance and part-time right now. I do everything full-time, as you know, Jordan. It's not a part-time job when you work in sports, even if the pay is part-time.
Yep.
But I love doing it, so I hope you guys enjoy what I bring. I think I must be doing pretty well if you keep bringing me back every Thursday, man. So I appreciate you having me on.
Oh, I love it. I love it. No doubt. We'll do it again next Thursday. Mark, thank you again. Enjoy the rest of the evening.
Oh, you do the same, man. I appreciate it.
Let's break one more time. We'll come back and put the final touches on this edition of the show when we return.